So some clarity yesterday with regard to, you know, what might be planned for William Nylander, what, you know, is preferred. We know Sheldon Keefe will be back. We know, and we always knew, that Austin Matthews is priority one. But we also learned that Brad Treliving will get to participate at the NHL draft only after the Calgary Flames make their selection at number 16. He will be allowed to be on the draft table or at the draft table with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the team that he is forerunning, the team that is his. He will get to actually be present once and only once the Calgary Flames get that pick done again at number 16. Interesting stuff there.
We going to get a pro wrestling entrance like, my God, that's Treliving's music, and he just comes charging in? Is that what's going to happen here? I need, like, look, TV product tonight, all right? I would like this played up. I would very, very much like to see Treliving walked onto the floor in some type of spectacle. Will not happen, but happy he's able to be at the table for the Leafs' sake.
So Treliving will be at the table, and our next guest will be at the desk. Our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. That is Jason Buchla, former director of amateur scouting for the Florida Panthers, and of course, Sportsnet analyst. Good morning, Buxy.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are doing pretty good. How's Nashville this morning? I know we got you up early. Is the sun rising there? Is Broadway clear? What's the vibe in Nashville?
Well, it's funny you mention that because, of course, I opened up the drapes here in the room, and I still see some people kind of, I don't know if they're doing a slow crawl back to their hotel at 6 o'clock in the morning, but this town never sleeps. It's on fire. It's unbelievable.
Tell Ailish to get to bed. That's not very responsible of her to be. No, I'm kidding. So Jason, obviously we want to look ahead to tonight, but got to look back at some of what we saw yesterday. Obviously, biggest piece of news, the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade. What do you make of it? I mean, we'll start with Winnipeg and the return they got there. You know, obviously, when you look at what Pierre-Luc Dubois is a player and what he is as an asset, those are separate things given, you know, his desire to move on from Winnipeg. How do you think the Jets did, given the circumstances they were in the return for Dubois?
You know, I think they did pretty much as well as they could do, given the circumstances. I mean, it's never easy, guys. You're dealing from a position of weakness. You're also trying to project out some players that would like to be a Winnipeg Jet long term. So I think they've done well that way. You know, Velarde, provided he stays healthy. He's had some back issues in the past, but when healthy, he's proven that he can score at the NHL level. So that's an attractive asset to add to the group. He was a big body, 6'3", I think around 215, somewhere around there. But you know, he's not a physical big body. He's just a big body. He's long, you know. I really like Kupari. I think Kupari's a serviceable prospect still. I think that he's got some upside there. He's more of a three than a two. Like, he's not going to ever be a top six guy, but I think he can play some responsible minutes in the middle of the lineup. And then, of course, Iafallo, that's kind of a veteran add in the mix there as well. So, all things considered, pretty close to as well as they could have done given the circumstances.
So in a move likely somewhat connected to Pierre-Luc Dubois ending up in Los Angeles, the Montreal Canadiens trade two draft picks to get Alex Newhook from the Colorado Avalanche. When you do your analysis on picks number 31 and 37, and you evaluate Alex Newhook, who went just inside the lottery a couple years ago, how do you evaluate that trade, how Colorado did, how Montreal did, what Montreal is getting in Newhook, and what Colorado can do with a pair of pretty valuable picks in what is believed to be a deep draft?
Yeah, that one there kind of underwhelms me. I'm not gonna discount it. Like, it. So every draft cycle is a little bit different. Well, a lot different. And you know, Newhook gets selected in a certain slot, and then he starts slotting out players in this draft. Players in this draft that are gonna go, 31 to 37. You know, if you look back even last year, those are more like 20 to 26 types of guys coming off last year's list, if you will. So I'm a little bit underwhelmed by this one. I think for me personally, that 31 and 37, given the cycle the Habs are in, would have maybe planed out to be more valuable than Newhook in my estimation. But Kent Hughes has intimate knowledge of Newhook. He was, he's a client of Kent's previous agency, if you will. And I don't know. I understand it. They're rolling it out kind of like the Kirby Doc acquisition last year, but that one underwhelms me. I would have stuck on 31 and 37 personally.
Yeah, the way I looked at it is it's almost there, and I realize it's kind of a cheaper version on both fronts, but it's almost their Brandon Hagel trade, except they're not two-time cup champs who are trying to do it for a third time. That's the way I kind of look at it. And yeah, it does feel like Montreal just kind of rushing things a little. Obviously, if you like the player, you're happy to get him, but I'm with you. I would have stuck with the assets there. You know, obviously with us, we've been so focused on the Leafs. I think for a lot of people in this market specifically, just with how set the top of the draft has been, you know, I think people have been a little hesitant to really dive in there. Is it as simple as saying tonight that the draft starts at 5, or do we maybe get a surprise at 4?
I have to be honest, like in the last couple of days. So for me personally, I've always believed the draft is going to start at 2. And it's not so much that the names are going to be different. They're just going to be slotted differently. So that was kind of how I felt about it. But I'm hearing yesterday, and we were out for dinner last night with Elliot and, you know, the guys, and, you know, I'm hearing a lot of different names coming up at 2. So I'm thinking I'm not going to be surprised to see Will Smith taken before San Jose's pick, and that kind of throws the order out a little bit in terms of where Carlson goes. I still believe Fantilli is going to be at 2, but getting down to 5, it's going to be fascinating, because if Will Smith is gone and for some reason Leonard was not available, it's going to be interesting to see what Montreal does if they're in trade back mode at that stage. At this point, I still believe in my heart of heart it goes Fantilli, Carlson, and then, you know, Smith, Leonard, and Arizona's the wild card. They've got 6 and 12, and do they want to roll something aggressive out there? If I'm them, I do. And the reason being that their timeline for all these prospects that are going to be starting to drop into their system, there's only 50 contracts. You're going to have to start to manage this timeline a little bit differently. So, you know, draft the best player available, and if it is Mitchkov, manage it as time goes on.
Well, tell us a little bit about Will Smith, Jason, because we don't know much about him. It might be the name that sort of, you know, maybe doesn't draw everyone's eye, but also he's been surging a little bit in draft boards when we've been talking about Bedard and Fantilli and Carlson for some time here. What is it about Smith that could have him leapfrog one of those three and maybe be enticing enough to the Anaheim Ducks to have him be the second overall pick tonight?
Well, Will Smith's a motion player, guys. So similar to a Mitch Marner, who doesn't really get in on the play physically, but he's always in motion. He's always around it. Will Smith is very similar to that type of style. He's an elite offensive brain, but he's got tons of cheat in his game. So he's one of those guys that's jumping to open space, hoping there's a chip off the wall. He can transport it between the blue lines. When he gets into one-on-one situations, even one-on-two sometimes, I mean, he's just gifted. He's able to beat people off the rush on his own. Good vision. I think that he just needs to clean up. All I need for this guy to be is average defensively. He's super elite offensively, like super elite. And when he gets a sniff in the offensive zone, pucks are going to the net either in a playmaking way or an aggressive shot on goal. And the fact that he can dance in the offensive zone is obviously, it's fun to watch him play. I can't discount it. There's just some warts, you know, in the detail that he's going to have to clean up before he gets to the NHL.
Yeah, and again, you know, not that anybody, you know, in this market is picking up there, but I'm sure a lot of people are hearing that going, ugh, I've seen how that plays in the games that matter. Maybe not the guy, but yeah, I'm with you on the high-end skill there, and it's also easy to get kind of sucked in by that. You know, obviously, these things are cyclical. We've had years where it's gone the exact opposite way. A little bit odd that there's the lack of defensemen that there are at the top end of this draft, or is that just kind of one of the weird, you know, things we see, you know, cycle in year in and year out with the draft? I mean, we've had years where it's been a run of defensemen up top, and obviously this year just not the case. Do you think any teams will get caught? Obviously, you know, we know with NHL prospects, they take a while. You don't really want to be drafting for need, but do you think there'll be some teams who are kind of reaching for defensemen tonight?
I don't think so. I think that it's going to be best player available right through the first round. Having said that, I do understand the question, because especially the top three guys in the first round, they're all right shot D. And that matters to a lot of teams. As we all know, those guys are they're unicorns, right? On the trade market later on, everybody seems to overpay for these types of players. But I still see Reinbacher, Sandin, Pelikka, and Willander going as the top three guys. After that, there's an interesting name. Like later on in the first round, you know, the other player. Well, first of all, we can't discount how good the Swedes are in the first round. This is a huge year for the Swedes. They could have as many as six guys go in the first round. So that's an anomaly. But there is a guy later on, Theo Lindstein, from Sweden as well, a defenseman, and he might end up, you know, down the road as it planes out, bringing as much value as the Willander type of kid when he arrives at the NHL level. And he's going to be a guy that goes in the 20s. So that's going to be an interesting strategy pick for somebody when he drops into that range.
So the Maple Leafs will draft in the late 20s, or at least are scheduled to, Jason. You know, you mentioned that there might be, you know, what type of player might be available there. You were talking about how, you know, picks 31 and 37 might be more like mid-20s on a different year. But there's also a change in philosophy, or a perceived change in philosophy, with a change in general manager here. We know Treliving will be there to make the pick. Once Calgary makes theirs at 16, he'll be, eligible, I guess, to sit at a table. What do we know about what the Leafs may do? Because we know Wes Clark's still running the show here. But do you think there'll be a change from a philosophy change or a philosophical change here for the Leafs? And is there a best case scenario at number 28 for this team when looking at the depths of the first round draft board?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I totally get the question. So my belief is that Wes, and I've worked, you know, Wes was on my staff in Florida before he came to Toronto, and I you know, he really values, let's just say, undersized skill guys who are excellent skaters who like to handle the puck and make plays. That's his MO. So a guy like Nick Lardis, who played in Hamilton, you know, that's the type of target that I think that Wes would value. Having said that, you know, for me personally, with Tree coming in, there's some other big body guys that are really good players. Like Dmitry Simashev is a Russian defenseman. He's like 6'4.5". Think Jay Bouwmeester back in the day in terms of his skating ability. Like, he's an elite skater. And the Leafs don't have that, guys. They don't have that in their pipeline. You know, they got the smaller guys in their pipeline, the Hollowells, the Nimas, those guys. You know, this is a guy that I would think that they would have serious discussion about. Understated offense. Spatial awareness is excellent, and he can kill plays with his length, kind of like a Gavrikov, okay? And, of course, there was talks around the deadline. You know how valuable Gavrikov was at the deadline. So, you know, when I start to think that out, I think that's a great fit. Calen Richey might be there from the Oshawa Generals, power forward type scorer. So it's going to be fascinating to see which way it goes, and it's going to be telling because the stamp will be, you know, today it's going to say something about where the Toronto Maple Leafs are going philosophically in their drafting and their organizational depth preparation. It's also too bad, I have to double down on this, that they just don't have a lot of draft capital. I mean, they got the first round pick, I get it, but you're going to sit there till round five. So do they entertain trading back and trying to pick up a couple of picks? Time will tell.
Yeah, so that kind of, I think you just answered it, but I'll ask you anyways here, Jason, is, you know, they've talked about putting that piece in play. You know, I understand there was maybe an offer made to Philly for Scott Laughton for that, or you know, involving that pick. What do you make of a team that obviously they're going to have to get players in here? You know, I completely understand the problems with the pipeline and the lack of talent coming beyond what's at the NHL roster right now, but they're going to have to find roster players as well. Do you think it's just a non-starter for the Leafs to move that pick given what they have? And I'm not talking about moving it to move back and collect other picks. I mean, moving it for someone who can help them next year. Do you think that's just a non-starter, or do you think it's still something they should consider?
No, I think you have to consider it. I mean, they're still in win now mode. Like, you know, so it's they're in a quandary. It's perplexing. I come from the amateur side, so clearly I want to have picks, right? Like, I want to fill out the organization, but at the same time, I want to win at playoffs. And if you can add a guy like a Scott Laughton, who's, you know, he's a 29-year-old glue guy with leadership ability. He plays hard between the whistles. You know, he's got better than secondary scoring upside, and he's making $3 million, which is, you know, relatively affordable for a guy that can be, you know, a 50-point-plus guy. Like, if you're going to trade out or if you're going to make an acquisition like that, I much prefer having – like, I've heard that they're circling back on Kerfoot in camp a little bit. I would add Lawton in a heartbeat before I brought Kerfoot back. Let me put it to you that way.
1,000%. Yeah.
Scanning draft boards or mock drafts, rather, Jason, not seeing many goaltenders. Who's the best goaltender in this draft? When are we going to see a goaltender come off the board? And what do you think of the philosophy of just like adding a goaltender every year? Because this is not an exact science, let's be honest. And if you just put one into the system every single time, maybe you yield yourself some pretty good results.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I've been on both sides of the ledger. You know, we drafted Spencer Knight early in Florida at the Vancouver draft. So for this draft cycle here, Michael Harable, who plays in Omaha in the United States Hockey League, you know, he's a giant, 6'7" goaltender. Think Ben Bishop when I'm describing him. The other guy that I have high on the list is Trey Augustine from the U.S. National Team Development Program. He's going to go to Michigan State. If St. Louis doesn't move picks 25 and 29, they've got those two first in the late round or two late first round picks. They're trying to move those picks. They want to move up. So like, but if nothing comes to them, I wouldn't be surprised to see possibly Harable go at 29. That wouldn't surprise me. If it goes to day two on the goalie side of the ledger, traditionally, as soon as one goalie goes, there's a run of goalies. So you'll see Bjarnason, Augustine, and Harable go early in day two. Your point about drafting goaltenders, like taking a run at a guy every year somewhere in the draft, it's a fascinating strategy. Two reasons. A, if they come from the CHL, you know, U.S. college route or Europe, so their timelines are different upon arrival. And then the other thing you have to factor in is my experience is most goalies don't hit until their second contract. So if you're investing development time in a goaltender, you better be sitting on them for two cycles of contracts. So you're looking at 4 or 5 years before they arrive. It's a long, long journey. So if you stock the cupboards, I guess you're going to hopefully hit on a guy here or there.
Where are you at philosophically? And obviously this isn't a problem for this year's draft, but we saw going back to 2020, you know, Askarov was there. You know, he was looked at as possibly, you know, a fringe top five pick. We know he ended up going 11 to the Preds. And you mentioned your experience taking Knight. Where are you at philosophically on drafting a goalie high? I mean, for me, and I'm not even saying I'm right, just I look at it, the position feels like such a crapshoot outside of one, you know, a handful of guys on any given year. I don't love the idea of it, but, you know, when it hits, obviously it proves to be a boon. Where are you at philosophically on the idea of taking a goalie high? Again, obviously not in the cards this year.
Yeah, we've done it. I've done it. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say that I love the strategy because I would be just flat out lying to you. So if you get to the point in your list in the first round that your best player available and it is a goaltender, your general manager at that stage is probably going to look at you, and if he's really in that goalie market and he's a believer in the product that he's seen as well, he's going to tell you to make the call. So do I love the strategy? I don't. And, you know, there's some outliers out there. I came from Nashville before I went to Florida. We drafted Pekka in the eighth round, guys. And, you know, so that speaks for itself. Dustin Wolf is almost the last pick in the draft in Calgary. He should make the Flames this year. So I don't love it, but it happens. And if it's the best player available, then make the pick.
So you're hearing a lot of Will Smith talk. You're hanging around insiders and people that know what's going on, people that are connected. Tons of chatter, clearly. We've got names going to different teams. We've got trades. We've got salary retention. We got it all happening right now, Jason. But if you had to make a prediction in terms of, like, what may happen tonight, what may happen, what may go down on the draft floor, is there a big swing? Do you expect some fireworks? Is there a name that you might want to throw out there in terms of a guy that might get dealt and might send shockwaves through this league?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question. The only reason I say that is because the free agency class is so soft, guys. Like, it really is, and so I, you know, I don't have a name that I want to pull out of my hat right now because that's Elliot's job. I'm more interested on the draft cycle side. I'm watching Columbus very closely here. I think Columbus might do something that Jarmo Kekalainen is unpredictable at the best of times. So the only name that I would connect to this whole thing, and I know they don't want to do it, but I'm not going to discount it, is Lindholm out of Calgary. With Columbus being involved in some sort of a conversation there, just with the Gaudreau history, and Columbus, I believe, is in win-now mode. So if I had to pull one out of the sky, I'd say keep a close eye on Lindholm to Columbus tonight, and we'll see if it happens or not.
Interesting. Columbus and definitely in that desperation mode. It was funny. We were talking to Merrick.
You don't hire that guy to lose.
No.
Not a second time.
It seems like Kekalainen, like, yeah, it has to happen now, and you bring in Babcock now to do it, I suppose. But we were talking to Merrick a couple weeks ago. He's like, you know, whatever Anaheim does, that makes the decision for Columbus. And I just cannot. I just can't wrap my head around that because Kekalainen always goes off the board. And, of course, he's sitting there at number three with a will and a desire to really improve this team this year. Last one for you, Jason. You know, Erik Karlsson's name's out there being shopped. He just won the Norris Trophy on Monday night. There's always that squabble in terms of retainment. But just in general and not talking about, you know, where he might end up or whatever, his value right now, should teams go after Erik Karlsson? Should teams that want to win a Stanley Cup make a play for this guy? Or is there more to consider, just like there was when looking at the Norris Trophy voting?
Buyer beware is still my vote. I know he's coming off of a ridiculous season. We all get it. But I'm still buyer beware on it. I'm also factoring in, you know, the term on the deal is long, guys. And was it lightning in a bottle last year? You got to get a third team involved in the transaction. Is that team going to want to take on a cap hit beyond 3 years, depending on the cycle they're in? There's so many moving parts with that deal that if it was me, I would be shopping elsewhere and waiting for free agency to hit and maybe going down a Dmitry Orlov type of a scenario. I know it's a different type of player, but at least you control the term. You control the amount of dollars in, dollars out that way.
Well, it may not be all that great to be Erik Karl. I mean, listen, just won a Norris
Trophy.
Awesome. But he wants to move on, but it is definitely a good summer to be Dmitry Orlov, who might be the best free agent out there and is going to secure a bag come July 1. Jason, this was fun. Have a fantastic broadcast tonight. We'll be watching, and enjoy the rest of your time in Nashville.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. I'll look for Eilish this morning when I'm going for coffee. Yeah.
Track her down. Yeah, track her down.
Okay.
Thanks, Jason.
All right,
Jason,
have a great
Bukla
day. Thanks for having me on. See ya.
You too. That's Jason Bukla, former director of scouting for the Florida Panthers, and, of course, one of our Sportsnet analysts and our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff from Books there. I think I do, you know, like the real hockey nerds have been drilled down to the top three and four and the machinations moving on there. But I just think there's been so much NHL news that whatever your team is, and let's be honest here, everyone listening, we're for the most part 90% Leaf fans here. It's like there's been a lot of scuttlebutt surrounding that. So, yeah, I think a perfect kind of reset there. And then always good to kind of check with a guy who understands the value of these picks, and was really, really interesting to see him put in perspective of what 31 and 37 this year could have looked like in other years past, and it was nice to hear I was right about that Alex Newhook trade as well.
You were. It did seem like that might.
I was right about a lot. I'm like, taking a goalie stinks up top. He's like, we've done it, and I agree. I was right about that a lot. Feeling very confident after that interview.
There you go. As you should. Let's get to something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum yum yum.
Okay, so Canada Basketball is a new head coach. Sacramento Kings associate head coach Jordy Fernandez, who was a finalist, we believe, top three in the search for the next Raptors head coach, has accepted the role as coach of the Canadiens men's national team, which means one Nick Nurse, the guy who gets it while the getting is good, is out, and Jordy Fernandez is now running this program. This was music to my ears because I think Nick Nurse is a brand play guy. I think this was more about, hey, can I just be the face of Canadian basketball after bringing a championship to Toronto? And now I can be a part of this rising crop of talent when really I'm just kind of jumping on board at the right time. I think Nick Nurse was just there for, hey, let's build myself up And that seems a little bit harsh, but I think there's a lot to that. I think it was part brand play, part, hey, another paycheck? Yeah, sure, give it to me. But when we're thinking about the long-term viability, when we're talking about long-term success, when we're talking about actually doing something with the talent at Canada's disposal right now, I want a hungry coach. I want a coach that wants the next job. I want Jordy Fernandez, who was a prospect and a coach, head coach in the NBA in waiting, and a guy who I think is going to give more than just surface-level stuff to this organization, and frankly, that's what it deserves.
I like the hire. I do agree with most of what you're saying. The only caveat and pushback I would have is that if everything goes according to plan here, this is a guy who is hopefully getting his first NBA head coaching gig right as the most important tournament for Canada basketball is starting, which they're not even in yet,
that
the
is
Olympics.
Fair.
So that's the one area I say, and again, like, that is a great problem to have because it means qualifying went great and you have a ton of buy-in. I think this is a really nice hire. He is a guy who has connections with Jamal Murray, which, let's be honest, him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they are the backbones of this program. You know, for all we talked about Wiggins and, you know, RJ Barrett is literally the chairman or president's kid, but let's be honest, this is all about Shai and Jamal and what they're able to do as a backcourt together. There's wonderful pieces around it, but if you have buy-in from those two guys specifically, and let's be honest, you get buy-in from one, you're going to get it from the other. Shai has
will
proved
you?
It. I do think so. Shai has proven I will show up for this
Shai,
team.
Shai, I'm not worried
and
about.
And Jamal Murray, he, now, the thing with all these guys in the past is there's always been a reason, a valid one. The hope, I think, with Murray is that, one, this is a guy he knows really well. This is a coach who he has worked alongside, and the other part of it is that he's climbed the mountain. Now, not to say that that means Jamal Murray's like, oh, I'm going to take my foot off the gas. I don't need to care about this NBA season. It's a shorter summer for him. It's a tougher ask. But I think that he has a having accomplished that and not needing to silence the critics or prove people wrong or whatever way you look at it, that to me just makes me believe you're going to have more of a buy-in from Murray there. And if you have it from those two, then it's a good hire. The thing that stood out the most about it to me was that they never fired Nick Nurse. I was wondering if I had missed it, and then I was seeing other informed basketball people saying, wait a minute, I thought Nick Nurse was still
there. Apparently Nick Nurse was a bit of an advisor on this decision.
Yes, I saw that as well, and this is why you're 100% right on what it was for him, right? It was a brand thing. The guy wears a Nick Nurse hat. It's not a brand thing with him. He clearly wanted to be the face of it, and I think that's why this needed to be seen as a mutual exit and not him, you know, leaving because of Philly, even though that is exactly what happened as well here. But I think that, yeah, that's why he wanted it to be seen as amicable as possible.
Yeah, it's okay if he advised. I'm fine with that. But I want someone who's going to be all in, and I'm more confident in Jordy Fernandez being all in than Nick Nurse. And you mentioned Murray. I am confident. I think the NBA title helps that. I think the next thing that I want to accomplish?
Yep.
I think it's pretty easy, or at least it's easy to reconcile in my mind. Not worried about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, excuse me, whatsoever. I think this is a really, really positive thing for Canada basketball. We have a busy morning still to come here. We're going to start with our guests on the other side. We're going to get to the guys who run this tournament, the Joe Carter Classic. Of course, we're at the 14th
first question,
annual.
Already locked and loaded for here.
Yeah, I'll let you even have a follow-up, Brent, if you need it. Glen Abbey Golf Club, that's where we are at for the 14th annual Joe Carter Classic. We will catch up with some guests on the other side of the break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We should probably circle back because we got about 10 minutes before the guests start piling in.
I'm curious where you're going because I got something I have on my brain.
I'll let you float it out there if you'd like.
We didn't give our man Seth Rohrbaugh out of Pittsburgh his proper due. And everybody's probably wondering, well, Gunner, who is that guy? I've never heard of him. Correct, you haven't until yesterday. He was the guy, was not Eric Francis, which I think would have been the funniest answer of all. But no, he was the guy. Our man Seth Rohrbaugh out of Pittsburgh, the lone first place voter for David Pastrnak.
What was the full ballot here from old Seth?
Okay, any guesses for second? Do you have a guess?
I know there's a Sorokin on there. I don't think it's second.
No, Sorokin's third. You got Jason Robertson second.
No way.
Sorokin third. Matthew Tkachuk four. Connor McDavid five.
Okay, so I didn't see. We were talking yesterday about there's got to be a content play here. There's got to be something. Didn't. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be something that I need to click on in order to figure out why, right? I need you've got to suck me in. You've got to profit off this somehow. I didn't see that.
I didn't see it. What I did see was some guy who works for the league before it got out there saying, I spoke to the individual and they have their reasons. I won't say what those are, but they have them, and we should respect them. And this just goes back to our whole thing from earlier in the or yesterday of having a take and owning it and standing by it. We should respect them. Once he tells us what they are, I'd very much like to hear it. So, yeah, you would think, like, the Players Tribune piece, very fitting, yes. coming out of Pittsburgh there, is coming for him. But, yeah, have not seen it yet. So, we spent a lot of time on this yesterday. I feel like we should circle back, case closed. Lock them up, throw away the key, or don't if you don't care.
And honestly, if not the content play, you do have to explain yourself. I mean, if someone's coming out and saying, he's got good reason, let's hear the reason. Mm-hmm. I think it's imperative that we do so, because right now he's just taking shot after shot on Twitter, and I guess just justifiably so, because if you're going to vote in the manner that he did, it does deserve some sort of explanation. Gunner's pulling up his Twitter.
Yeah,
just in case there's an update since we last scanned his Twitter feed.
The last thing we have from him is just letting another media member know he's playing shuffleboard.
So do you think that is a shuffleboard in Nashville? Because if
it looks honky-tonkish. But, I mean, you know, it also looks like it could be in rural Pennsylvania
That's
at the
true.
Same time.
I feel like that shuffleboard could be anywhere. But
literally
but,
on Earth.
If he's in Nashville right now, is he just wearing it from everybody else? Because everybody in the hockey world, associated with the hockey world, reporting for any team, writing for sites that are beyond paywalls.
Yep.
If you are doing that, you are in Nashville right now, and I wonder about the treatment he's receiving. Because, yeah, he definitely is standing out. On that ballot.
I think if he's a notable, and I'm not trying to, you know, rip the guy. Listen, I'm not getting noticed in Nashville walking down the street either, right? But if this were Friege or somebody who, you know, people see on TV all the time, a more notable personality, I do think Joe Blow in Nashville is like, oh, nice vote there, Sethy, if they knew who he was. But no one knows who he is, so I think are some of his media buds giving it to him a bit if he's there?
That's what I meant. I mean, I don't think he's sure. getting heckled on Broadway. I think people on Broadway have other things that they're
hope,
doing.
I hope they have way better things to do than that. But, yeah, I'm sure it's, you know, it's like anything. We've all been on a team before, okay? You're chirping your bud. Like, does he make a bad pass? Yes, it's okay. Like, we can all laugh about it. I mean, make a better one next time, and that's probably exactly what's happening. So, yeah, I think he's hearing it a bit.
How honky-tonk is that shuffleboard is a question that we need answered by the end of the show. I was going to bring up the Toronto Blue Jays because I think we should circle back.
Mm.
We kind of just glossed over the fact that Kevin Gausman was electric.
It's just a bad day in general other than him.
Or the extra day rest, rather. And it's like it is kind of the secret weapon, which is kind of unfortunate, or a lot unfortunate, because when you get Gausman on that extra day, and we're on a four-man rotation here for the Toronto Blue Jays, so that extra day, well, it's not necessarily a thing, but squandering a start from Kevin Gausman, where in which he is his 6 days rest stuff, or has his 6 days rest stuff, it is just a little bit disappointing to have your offense fail to come through once again not get a win in a brilliant start for Kevin Gausman. We are getting our first guests of the day here. They are the co-chairs of the Joe Carter Classic.
They come bearing gifts.
We're just getting them mic'd up here. I think we're ready to go, but I will introduce them as we get set up here. And they did bring sweaters, which is fantastic.
It's a great start.
Thank you so much, guys. It's Pierre Frappier and James Dodd. Frappier is the president of AMG Campbell, and Dodds is the senior vice president at TD Bank. Good morning, fellas. This has become the celebrity event of the summer. Like, I'm going through this guest list, this tee sheet, and it's remarkable. I don't think there's anything Toronto-wide in the summer that gets as much attention as this golf tournament guest. So I guess my first question is, like, how is this such a draw? How do you guys pull off such a big event with such an incredible list of celebrities taking part?
I got two words for you, Joe Carter.
That's pretty good, yeah. It works out pretty well. So what makes him such a great guest then, or host rather?
I mean, to start with, thanks for having us on. I know you folks have been here for many years, spreading the cause and the message, which we really, really appreciate. But look, Joe uses his connections and his contacts and his goodwill that he's built up over all these years to call in favors to get these athletes to come in, many of whom have never been to Canada, or when they come to Canada is only for his tournament.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that surprises a lot of people, myself included. You know, I know it's a big event. I know you guys get a ton of guests, but seeing the names, and, you know, when you see the hockey players, I think a lot of people expect that. But, oh, Dan Marino and Roger Clemens and other of these, you know, really, really important names. And, I know obviously with any tournament like this, you're having a good day. Everybody's having fun, but there's obviously, you know, a really important charity aspect as well. I'll put that to you, Pierre. What's the charity involved here in just how important is it to be able to spread the goodwill and, quite frankly, the finances that you guys are able to because of this?
Well, thank you. And charity component's huge. I'm a board member of the Children's Aid Foundation and been involved with them for a while. And James came to us, and they had this tournament doing very well. AMJ got connected and really took the Children's Aid Foundation to another level as the beneficiary of this tournament. I mean, we cannot do enough for kids in this world,
for sure,
in our country, in our province. So the Children's Aid Foundation is extremely ecstatic about being involved. They're out there as volunteers. They're going to be on holes. And we are so fortunate to be part of this great tournament. And the participants and the athletes, everyone gets involved and makes sure that they acknowledge the Children's Aid Foundation. So we're very fortunate. And Mr. Dodds is the architect of bringing AMJ here. And by the way, I just want to say, Roger Clemens found out he was golfing with AMJ Campbell. He bailed. I told somebody not to tell him.
Okay, well, I like a Boy Scout, I always want to be prepared. Should there be a spot, I just want you guys to know, I got my sticks in the car. It is not that far of a walk for me. So if there is a spot out there, I'm happy to fill in. Not quite the
start. So you're going to bail on the team?
No, I would gladly bail on these guys. This guy's more than capable
of
talking to himself.
I will take it the rest of the way if you get that.
He will gladly.
I will do that for you.
So, yeah, don't make promises that you're not prepared to keep, because I'd love to get out there. But in terms of this, you know, it comes to Glen Abbey, obviously a really important place in Canadian sport in and of itself. Can you just talk about kind of what hosts they've been, obviously, the 14th year that you guys have been doing it? And, you know, just looking around the facilities here, it seems like it's kind of the perfect venue for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Glen Abbey has been a phenomenal host for us for many years, and especially for the celebs that come in as well, this is a real treat to play. They all know that Tiger hit that shot, you know, out of the bunker. They all want to hit it themselves.
I've tried it.
and for all our local guests and sponsors, playing the Abbey is always a treat, right? And so it was a no-brainer to have it here. They've been nothing short of phenomenal kind of hosting us. I think this is one of the few tournaments they do here, so we're super happy and super proud about that.
So special event, special cause, also the 30th anniversary of Joe Carter hitting his home run and hitting, you know, winning the World Series for the Toronto Blue Jays for the second time and doing so in the grandest fashion imaginable. How is that being commemorated this year? It's the 14th time that this golf tournament has been played, but it's the 30th anniversary. So how is that being commemorated?
Yeah, so two things we're doing. I'm sure the Jays are doing other things as well, but we brought you these really nice hoodies that have got Tom Cheek's quote right on the back of it that we're giving out to all the participants. And then secondly, the Jays did a bobblehead for Joe, and we're giving those out again today. So we're super excited. You asked Joe said he never gets tired about talking about that home run. He's been milking
that. We can attest to that,
For 30 years, yeah. And I'm sure he's going to milk it for 30 more.
And he should. I've done way less, and we'll try to milk it for way longer. So, yeah, I would never knock him for doing that. Sorry, go ahead.
But this time we've also got our man Jose Bautista back. So first time he's been back in, I think, 5-6 years.
Yeah, a while.
So. You should ask him which was bigger, his home run or Joe's.
So we had him. We actually had Jose on right at the beginning of the season. We connected with him over the phone, so it'll be nice to see him in person here today. He's actually going to jump on with us, and yeah, maybe we'll get him to compare and contrast for all the English majors out there. we'll see how it is. You know, just again, it goes to the star power that Joe has, and you know, can you just kind of talk about who he is as a person? You know, I think he has become this mythical figure for Canadians. I mean, you know, myself, I was around in 92, but I wasn't around for all that long in 92,
and there are people who were not born who still think of it as this kind of holy sports moment. But Joe's so much more than one moment. You know, obviously, you two guys have got to know him well and work with him as chairs of the event here. We'll start with you, I guess, Pierre. What is Joe as a person, and what does he bring to the event in and of itself?
Well, I got to meet Joe 4 or 5 years ago when we got involved. And the thing I'm going to say about Joe is after this day's over, everyone who's here will have shook his hand and said hi to him, either by going up to meet him or him meeting them. That's amazing. And everyone's going to remember their moment with Joe, picture with Joe. And he's so engaged. He's into it. You know, it's just, you can tell. And I think that's just fascinating for an individual. Lives in Kansas City, but Toronto's his second home. Yeah. And you can tell. It's sincere. We appreciate it. And again, today I got my Joe Carter. You can't see. Well, you can see Joe Carter rookie card signed.
Oh, look at that. Wow. That is
beautiful. Is serious stuff. So thanks to my good friend, Mr. Dodd. Just keeps getting better every year.
Oh, that's wonderful. Visual medium here, but it is a Chicago Cubs rookie card.
Nice
that
case. I'm thinking you should get like a safety deposit box. Yeah.
That would have been a good trivia. As quick as who possible. Drafted Joe Carter?
I would have. Yeah, I should have saved it. Nobody listened there. Go ahead, James.
Yeah. I mean, look, just to Pierre's point, in the box last night.
Yeah, Joe, I was there.
Joe was standing there, and there must have been a lineup of 50 people lining for pictures, yep. Selfies, autographs, more pictures, and he stood there, and he talked to every one of them with a big smile, and that is who Joe Carter is. And I've had the privilege of knowing him for many years, and I always say he's as big an all-star off the field as he was on the field when he played. And
yeah.
I think that's a good way to describe him.
So I was in the box last night. And it's funny, you know, when we're getting the guest list here, we're looking at it. And like we started out talking to you guys, we're going, how do they get all these names here? I mean, Emmitt Smith and the list goes on and on. And I got just a little glimpse of it being in the suite last night. And yeah, you can easily see why everybody loves being a part of it. I saw the line for Joe. And yeah, you know, it's got to be so, you know, warming to get that everywhere you go. But conversely, I imagine there's a lot of people who tire of it as their life goes on. And to hear that hasn't been the case for Joe, you know, it's obviously so exciting. You know, just looking at
who do you. Who did you meet last night? Did you get a chance to chat with them?
So being in this business, we get to meet a fair amount of people, and I decided to just kind of hang back and enjoy the ball game. We get to meet a lot of people in this, so I know there are a lot of people who were there last night who that is not part of their everyday, so I kind of hung back. I did see Damon Allen walking around with an awesome pair of, like, he was showing off these, like, they looked like leather or crocodile shoes to everybody. That looked great. So I didn't get a chance to meet him, but that was my celebrity kind of highlight of the night.
Looney Dog night, yeah. So Gunnar was a little...
No, not Looney Dog night. My producer, my man right here, Daniele, can attest. I got a seat in the front row and only got up for food and beverage. So I thoroughly enjoyed the sweep, but I was locked in on the ball game. You know, just again, looking at the list here, we'll run down some of the names. You mentioned Batista there, but, you know, other Jays legends, Cito Gaston, Sean Green, Dave Stewart, and then Barry Larkin, Kenny Lofton, Dion Phaneuf, Emmitt Smith, Jayna Heffert, Doug Gilmore. The list goes on and on. I could continue to list forever. It is, I don't really have a question to end things here. It's just I commend you guys for the exceptional work you've done. And, you know, there's a lot of charity tournaments that will have one or two big celebrity names. But to your point, I really don't know that there's anything in the city or the province that draws them quite
well. Well, I will say I think it's worth asking because we're at the buzzer here. I mean, check-ins happening. There's a lot of a movement here at Glen Abbey, but it's for a great cause, and I imagine people can get involved still maybe at the buzzer if they so choose. Is there any way that our listeners can help support this tournament even though we are very, very close to tee off here?
Absolutely. I mean, Children's Aid Foundation, go on their site, go on the Joe Carter website. You want to make a donation, all the money goes to Children's Aid Foundation, all of it. And we're talking serious six-digit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably their largest private contribution throughout the year for the foundation. And, you know, I just want to talk quickly with the foundation and kids.
Yeah,
as we come out of COVID, we come out of different times. You know, young kids out there are having challenges, not just in Ontario, but across Canada. We've got some different challenges with our young kids. So they are needed more than ever. So every nickel, every dime helps. And this is a great kickoff to their campaign for 2023.
Yeah, hey, you don't have to sell me on that. My little guy was born right in the throes of COVID, so he is a COVID baby learning the world through the throes of it. So I know what that's been like. And honestly, you know, just off the back of that, I know it can feel sometimes for some people like we're still living in it. Some people it's removed, but just to be able to get back to these in-person events like this, you know, I know that there's a hiatus for a while there, given everything that's happened. And I do still feel like when you get in an event like this, there's still just a kind of rush of energy and people are excited to just be doing things. And I can see, again, I'm peeking
this
over my shoulder looking at everybody
full out
coming
this
in.
Year. There is no restrictions. And again, I just wouldn't be remiss if I didn't acknowledge James Dodd and Raul. These two guys are the architect of this, and they've done an amazing job. You know, years of making calls and getting people to come, that's can't say enough about what they do.
Yeah, James, it's quite the honor, and you two definitely deserve it. I know it's going to be a great day here today. I know I'm going to be jealous talking to you for the next couple hours here. Everybody who's out there teeing it up.
The pitch didn't quite work.
I know. Look, you think I'm going to shoot my shot only once here? Honestly, I continue to commend you guys. Children's Aid, there's a lot of great charities you could do it for. You know, I worked with kids all throughout my teen years growing up, so that's very near and dear to my heart as well. So I'm happy to hear that. Cannot commend you guys enough.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys, for stopping by. We definitely appreciate the gifts.
And
more than that, you know, inviting us here and giving us a chance
parting gifts, gentlemen.
Please,
James. But it should be us thanking you. I mean, think about all your listeners that are hearing about this. They're hearing about all the great work Children's Aid does. This should be us thanking you. So thank you for coming. And look, maybe we can sneak you out on the golf course.
Okay, maybe.
Hold on. Go to the director first. He's got to give the thumbs up.
It wasn't a no, which is really all I was after. Guys, I was looking at those sweaters last night. They look beautiful. Thrilled to get my hands on one of them today. Cannot thank you enough. And again, yeah, it's a little bit like the suckerfish on a shark in the ocean. We're helping each other out. You're the shark. Don't worry. We know where we're at in that relationship here. Thoroughly enjoyed having you guys on. And again, I know it's going to be a great day. I'm sure we'll see you around before we get out of here today. But just, again, commend you guys on everything that's been done here. And James, anything else from you?
No, thanks again for having us.
That's awesome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it, guys. Enjoy the day.
Yeah, it'll be great. Thank you so much.
It's Pierre Frappier and James Dodds, the co-chairs of the Joe Carter Classic. We are in the 14th edition of Joe Carter's Classic Golf Tournament, live from Glen Abbey Golf Club. And yeah, commemorating the 30th anniversary of Joe Carter's World Series winning home run. That was fun, guys. Thanks again. Enjoy the day.
Honestly, one of the more, like, we know it as this famous Canadian moment, and of course the most famous Blue Jays moment, but honestly, just in Major League history, the way it happened, there's only been a handful of those. It was the shot heard around the world, and it was Joe Carter, and there may be one other that I'm missing there. These things just do not happen. Walk off at home to win the World Series. The fact that Tom Cheek slammed it home with the awesome call, every part of it. I'm getting goosebumps a little bit just sitting here thinking about it. It really does kind of, you know, again, something so close to you, you can forget at times how special and how legendary it is. And yeah, the 30th anniversary of Touch 'Em All Joe, certainly feeling extra special today.
Yeah,
for sure.
Both you and I were around for that home run, but maybe not all that conscious for it. So we lived through the stories of others, and we're going to go through some of those stories today with our guest list. And maybe you're right, we can compare and contrast with Jose Bautista, because he will be around the table later on this morning as well. But yeah, I think that's one of the general themes I want to touch on a little bit, is that, yeah, that was such a special moment, how different it was viewed. The athlete network here is a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because Joe Carter, a lot of the people were talking, Doug Gilmour, who was in 1993 doing special things for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, times have changed, obviously, and maybe it wasn't easier or harder being an athlete then, but maybe growing that network and just being more of a normal person was a little bit easier. Not to say that Joe Carter, Doug Gilmour, normal people whatsoever, but maybe I want to pick their brain a little bit on how different it was. And that was clearly a viral, incredible moment in the Jose Bautista, beyond probably Jose Bautista in terms of consequence. But it is viewed differently, or it was captured differently. It was experienced differently. And I do want to unpack that a little bit.
It's funny. You talk about the kind of unity between the Leafs and the Jays there, especially Gilmour, Carter, obviously both of them here today. But, you know, I remember the, I'm trying to think. It was like the Colby Armstrong era Leafs, it felt like, with the team unit stuff. Do you remember this?
When
it
was
So, you know, there is always the kind of simpatico hockey players and baseball players. There is just a big-time mutual respect there. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to dive
into. Grady Dick was hanging out at the Blue Jays.
That's right.
Like, there is overlap.
Well, it's just
but it is different.
Game recognized game, right?
It
like, there's
different.
Just a certain respect that those guys have. And, you know, it's like, obviously, it's completely different. But it's like, you know, we see the CH5 people cruising around the building, and yeah, it's like we do the same job. You just have that that certain kind of respect or you know, kinship with them, I guess, for lack of a better term. So yeah, it's awesome to see how long that's lasted for Carter and the guys he was friends with, and great to see how many people are going to be here today.
The breakfast area is not flooded yet, but we expect to be sort of overrun by celebrities in mere moments here. Let's get to a break because we've got a busy 8 a.m. hour. We do not have Roger Clemens to start things off anymore, but we're going to find someone to fill in for him. And, of course, we'll get Doug Gilmore at 8:15.
I'm going to go bug the tournament director.
Well,
That's what I'm going to do.
Brent Gunning's going to try to book his D time. So we'll see if it's me and Gunner after the break, but I will be here for sure as celebrities continue to pour through here at Glen Abbey at the 14th annual Joe Carter Classic Golf Tournament. We will be back in mere moments.